bringing her right hand into a salute.
"Close the door behind you,"
the Queen Regent said, waving a hand. Lydia turned and closed the door, feeling even more isolated.
"Come, sit down."
Lydia followed the order quickly, taking a seat in the center of the three chairs across from the Queen Regent. Tylin looked up immediately as Lydia sat, shifting her stacks of paper aside and looking straight at the sorceress.
"I have a task for you, Lydia,"
Tylin said, steepling her fingers on the table. Lydia nodded.
"An odd time to ask for something, but not that strange, I suppose. She's given me orders before."
"What do you need?"
The Queen Regent reached to another pile of papers on the table, split the stack, and immediately retrieved a paper from the top. She flipped it around to face Lydia and passed it across the table.
"There's a caravan leaving the city in 2 hours. They'll be waiting at the address at the top of that page. You're to hand that paper over to the captain of the caravan's guards, Corin Matthews. You'll note my seal at the bottom."
Lydia quickly glanced over the page, noting a wax seal at the bottom with the symbol of a harp. The page instructed that Lydia was to take command over the caravan in the case of attacks by enemy sorcerers. She looked back up at the queen quizzically.
"Problem?"
the Queen Regent asked.
"No, Queen Regent. Why are you expecting an attack on the caravan by sorcerers?"
Lydia rested her hands in her lap, contemplating.
"There have been some peculiar rumors about foreign sorcerers working within the city. Your presence will merely be a precaution,"
the Queen Regent said with a soft smile.
"Foreign sorcerers? Wait, are those rumors about me? Or Jonan, perhaps?
May I bring some additional support with me in that case? Court Sorcerer Verudin, perhaps?"
Tylin shook her head.
"That won't be necessary. I'm sure you'll be quite capable of handling any incidents by yourself."
Lydia allowed herself to frown.
"And the caravan is leaving in 2 hours? I'll barely have time to make it to the gate by then."
"You'd better get running, then. Is there anything else?"
Lydia read over the paper again.
"It doesn't say anything about what this caravan is carrying."
"No,"
the Queen Regent replied.
"It doesn't. There are 6 wagons. Their cargo is very valuable. The 3rd wagon from the front is carrying an ambassador from Sullia. The caravan is his. He needs to leave immediately, and he needs to survive the journey to Coldridge. Once you get him there, you can return home. Any trouble should occur before that point."
The sorceress quirked a brow.
"Would you mind divulging the source of these rumors? It might help give me some context for making the necessary defensive preparations."
The Queen Regent waved a hand dismissively.
"I have my resources, dear. Just be careful. I wouldn't want anything unfortunate to happen to you."
"Thank you,"
Lydia said, trying to sound as sincere as possible.
"Sometimes I hate this job."
Lydia pressed a newly written note against the mirror in her pouch.
"Away on Queen's business for a few days,"
it said. With business attended to, she followed the Queen Regent's directions to the location of the caravan.
"Corin Matthews?"
Lydia inquired, noting a man in front of the caravan wearing a gold-trimmed silver breastplate. He was shorter than most of the Queen's guard, but he looked very athletic, and he wore a flanged mace on his left hip.
"That's me,"
he said, turning around toward her. He looked startled when he faced her, taking a step back.
"A sorceress? What can I help you with?"
"Looks like I'm coming along with you for the ride,"
she said, handing him the wax-sealed letter.
"Huh,"
he said, reading it over.
"I hadn't heard anything about this, but I'm not one to argue with a sorceress, or the queen, of course. Sorceress support? What's that mean, precisely?"
She leaned over to whisper to him.
"Means we're probably going to be attacked. Possibly by another sorcerer, actually. Keep 3 eyes open, yeah?"
He leaned back and nodded to her solemnly.
"You can count on me, Miss Sorceress. Let me go tell the other guards."
She snagged his arm as he turned to leave.
"Just keep it discreet. I don't want the civilians hearing about it."
Corin raised an eyebrow.
"Not sure I see the sense in that."
She leaned in again.
"I don't want anyone to panic. And if the sorcerer is among the people within the wagons, I don't want him to know that we're aware he might be attacking us soon."
He nodded solemnly and put a hand on the arm that she had used to seize him.
Not to worry, miss. I'll use the utmost discretion.
May I inspect the wagons? Lydia asked.
He shook his head.
Guess you haven't heard yet. Our orders are not to disturb anyone inside those wagons, for any reason. Important ambassadors or some such. Like to keep to themselves.
Ambassadors. And the Queen said an ambassador from Sullier. Does she mean Rethri ambassadors? Oh, gods, are we shipping prisoners?
No problem, Lydia said brightly. I'll look forward to working with you and your men.
Thanks, he said, pulling his arm away. I need to get back to work.
One last thing, she said. Hand that arm back.
He raised an eyebrow quizzically, and then handed his arm back over silently. She took his hand.
Dominion of protection, fold against his skin.
A shimmering field of translucent energy enveloped his body for just an instant, and then faded into invisibility.
Thanks?
A precaution is all. Hopefully it won't turn out to be necessary,
Lydia smiled.
Now, let's get this caravan ready to go, shall we?
Night had fallen before the caravan exited the city gates. They were only about an hour behind schedule, which was good by caravan standards, at least in Lydia's experience. It helped that none of the inhabitants of the front five wagons ever entered or exited their enclosures. Only the people riding in the rear wagon, a few civilians unassociated with the rest of the caravan, came out to finish packing their goods or carouse with the guards.
"Why are there civilians in the last wagon?"
Lydia asked.
Corin shrugged.
Until you came by, we weren't aware there was anything unusual about this escort. Although, to be fair, I'm not usually put on caravan guard duty. Lord Esselmont insisted on coming along with us, since he's heading the same direction we are and he wanted protection. I wasn't in a position to argue.
Why would someone want to leave the city in the middle of the night?
Lydia pondered aloud.
It's not really that unusual, miss, especially during the warmer months. It's possible they just don't want to deal with the heat, or perhaps they just had final preparations to make during dawnfire hours.
Lydia nodded.
That might be right. Thanks for the reassurance.
Corin gave her a half-salute and went back to organizing. The wagon drivers were all members of Corin's guard, which was somewhat unusual, but not unheard of. They seemed well-trained but nervous, probably because Corin's trusted few guards had spread the word of a potential attack to all the others. If the attacker was already traveling with the caravan, a possibility that Lydia had considered, this heightened sense of nervousness might have put the attacker on alert as well. Lydia had judged that warning the guards was worth the risk, but the ambiguity of the situation left a foul taste in her mouth. She'd need to react, rather than taking the aggressors out in advance. She hated operating that way, though it would hardly be the first time she'd been forced into that situation. She knew to take precautions for the contingencies she was capable of planning for.
Dominion of protection, fold against my skin, and teach me the secrets of the dominions that assault you.
Lydia renewed the comprehensive barrier that protected her just as the front wagon began to move. The spell sent a tiny tingle along her skin, causing her to shiver for just a moment.
Can't cast too many more of these today, or I'm going to be useless for days.
Protection spells drew from the body's natural ability to ward off harm. Practicing protection sorcery often ended with Lydia sick in bed or nursing stubborn bruises that appeared from even a mild brush with anything particularly solid. She'd marched along with the wagons, alongside three regular soldiers and Corin. He'd offered her a place to sit alongside any one of the caravan guards, but she'd declined. Coldridge was a long walk, over a day away at a caravan's pace, but she didn't trust her perception to be as good while riding. This way, she could periodically walk by each of the wagons to check for disturbances. The wagons made it out of the city without incident, as she'd expected. She had Corin list out the names of the guards with her, but none of them struck her as particularly suspicious. She'd met a handful of them from work at one of the two palaces,
but she didn't know any of them particularly well. Corin himself seemed friendly enough. His anxiousness faded a bit as they made it into the open air of the wooded trail outside the city, winding toward the northwest.
If I was a renegade sorcerer, when would I choose to attack a caravan on the way to Coldridge?
Lydia pondered that question inconclusively, but it led her to a more important one.
Why would someone be attacking this caravan in the first place?
She let herself fall back to the second to the last wagon, taking a slow pace as she considered her options.
They've been very insistent that no one go inside the other wagons. Someone has to have seen them loaded, though. Maybe I can get one of the guards to talk. Then again, if someone along the caravan is going to help coordinate the attack, I don't want to arouse their awareness of my awareness.
One of the guards driving the wagon noticed her and gave a little wave. She waved back, giving him a friendly nod, and turned her head back to the road.
If only I could see inside the wagon without going in there. Like what Jonan did with the door to his house. I wonder.
She glanced at the door side of the wagon, and then let herself fall behind a little further, out of the sight of any of the guards. She had no experience at Liadrin-style sorcery, or at anything involving the Dominion of Sight, but her comprehensive barrier had absorbed one of his spells. It gave her an intrinsic understanding of the spell that had been cast, almost as if she had used it herself. She had never attempted to cast a spell based on that data alone before, but now seemed like a good time to try. First, Lydia had to adjust her comprehensive barrier. Her style of barrier would be triggered by any sort of incoming sorcery, regardless of the source. That meant that even spells she attempted to cast on herself would be blocked by it, as long as it was active. Any spell that impacted with the shield would expend some of its energy, regardless of whether or not that spell was harmless. The stronger the spell, the more the barrier would be weakened. She took a deep breath, visualizing the barrier in her mind, and spoke.
Suppress barrier, face.
Lydia felt a slight tingle across her face as the barrier reshaped, and she knew from experience that she had just created a hole in the barrier. This would both allow the incoming spell to work and to prevent the barrier from being weakened. Touching the wall of the wagon, Lydia pictured the spell that Jonan had cast in her mind.
Eyes close. Erase target in mind. Sustain image. Target self. Open eyes.
When she reopened her eyes, nothing had visibly changed. Lydia tensed her jaw in frustration.
What was I expecting? Casting a completely new type of sorcery successfully on my first try?
She tapped a finger on the wood absently.
Maybe I can adapt it to work with the Velryon style.
The sorceress took a deep breath, glancing from side to side self-consciously.
Now or never, I guess.
Dominion of Sight, she muttered.
Erase the image before me, but only for myself.
Lydia's vision blurred, but within the blur, she could see the contents of the wagon. She gaped, both at the success of the spell and the figures inside. Two Rethri males, adults, reclined against the right wall. They looked awake and aware, and one of them leaned in close to the other, whispering something that Lydia couldn't hear. On the opposite side were children. Four figures, bundled in blankets, huddled together. Their eyes were closed. She couldn't determine if they were Rethri or human. Upon reflection, she couldn't even tell if they were sleeping or dead, although the blankets wouldn't have made much sense in the latter case.
What am I dealing with here?
She had considered the possibility that the missing Rethri were in the wagons, but Jonan's description had only included children, and these adults didn't look to be captive in any way. They were awake, aware, and unencumbered by any sort of chains or shackles.
"Stop the wagons!"
came a voice from the front of the line. Lydia broke into a run, her vision still swimming from her unexpected use of sight sorcery.
Good time to try out a new trick, Lydia, really.
She came up behind Corin a few moments later, who stood in the middle of the road, three other guards at his side. He faced off against a figure in violet robes who stood about 10 paces further down the road. It wasn't until Lydia came up to Corin's side that she recognized the bandages on the opposing sorcerer's right hand.
"Lydia!"
Verudin's voice called out incredulously. You're the traitor? Lydia quirked a brow at the blur of her friend.
I don't know what you're talking about, Verudin. From this angle, it looks like you're the one barring the path.
Verudin folded his arms in front of him.
The people in those wagons are fugitives. I have orders to return them to the city immediately.
Fugitives? Orders? Oh, Resh.
Corin stepped protectively in front of Lydia.
You can let us handle this, miss. He's just one man, sorcerer or not.
Lydia stepped right back in front of Corin.
I don't intend for this to turn into a fight. Verudin, step aside. Let's talk about this. I think we've been set up.
Maybe you were, Verudin said uncertainly. I can't step out of the road. Sorry, Lydia. My orders were pretty clear.
Time for a gamble, then. Those aren't fugitives back there. I've met the people in the back. They look like ordinary civilians. No prison brands, certainly. And the others are supposed to be a Salirian ambassador and his entourage.
Might just be that you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, then, Lydia. Someone here is trying to sneak prisoners out of the city.
He waved a hand at the wagons.
Maybe it's not all the wagons. It'd be smarter for them to come through along with a normal caravan, in fact.
I'm going to need to see your authorization,
Lydia said, folding her arms. Her vision was slowly starting to clear, just sufficiently to make out Verudin's uncertain expression.
Authorization? What are you babbling about, Scryer? We're both court sorcerers,
he waved a hand.
Are you trying to stall for time?
She shook her head.
Corin, hand over my papers.
I don't exactly have them.
Get them,
Lydia insisted, waving him away. Corin hesitated for just a moment, then nodded and complied. The remaining three guards looked at her uncertainly, but she just raised a warding hand for them to wait.
I don't see what papers have to do with any of this, Verudin said, taking a step forward.
My orders, Lydia began, hoping to prevent a bloodbath, are from the Queen Regent herself, with her seal. She asked me just a couple hours ago, interrupting me in the middle of my meal with Adon and Talion, to rush here to guard the caravan.
That doesn't make any sense. Adon ordered me...
He paused, sighing.
Okay. Starting to see what you mean about one of us being played.
Lydia nodded.
Give the guard captain a minute to get...
Don't need the papers, he said. I believe you. You said you'd checked one of the wagons, though not all of them. Only way we can know what's really going on is by checking them all.
Can't disagree with that logic, but the guards were given explicit instructions not to let anyone in the other wagons. Resh it.
Yeah,
Lydia agreed.
You're right. We checked them together. Guards, stand down!
The guards looked from one to another, doubtfully. Then back to her.
I'm not sure we're allowed.
I'm under the Queen Regent's authority, remember?
Lydia grinned.
Don't worry. No one is going to blame you if something goes wrong. The responsibility falls on me.
One of the soldiers breathed a sigh of relief about that, but the other two seemed uncertain. They took steps back, away from Verudin, hands on blades. Verudin walked over to Lydia's side, and the pair of them headed to the side of the first wagon. Lydia waved to a pair of guards who were still seated at the coach box, prepared to move the horses at any time.
Step down and be ready to intercept anyone who attempts to attack us,
she ordered the guards. They complied immediately, taking it a step further by drawing the swords at their sides.
I'll go first,
Verudin said, stepping up to the side of the coach and opening the door. A sword went right through his center a moment later. Istvan stood in the doorway of the coach, withdrawing his blade with a flourish. Lydia's sword flashed into her hand, and she reached with her left hand to grab Verudin and steady him, but her hand passed through him. Verudin vanished an instant later. Istvan stumbled forward as if he had been struck, catching himself on the dirt.
What in the name of the gods was that about Istvan?
Lydia demanded, eyes scanning the area for Verudin.
Should have known this was an ambush,
Verudin said from somewhere nearby. The five uncertain guards nearby had their swords drawn, but they didn't seem to know who to point them at. Two of them faced vaguely toward Istvan, while the others looked around with bewildered expressions.
Verudin didn't just teleport,
Lydia realized.
Istvan never hit him.
He's using sight sorcery.
Get Varudin, now!
Istvan rasped, reaching with his empty hand to cover his ribs.
He's here to take the ambassador.
Dominion of knowledge, illuminate the hidden!
Lydia shouted, searching for Varudin. She only caught a vague blur to Istvan's right before a fist slammed into the sorcerer's mask, shattering it to pieces and smashing Istvan toward the dirt. Varudin appeared above Istvan, a flickering sphere of blue light in his hands, preparing to throw downward.
No! Stop!
Lydia charged at Varudin, swinging the flat of her blade at her friend. He glanced at her just before the blade struck, and the sword sailed through him, meeting only empty air. The false image of him flickered and disappeared a moment later.
He tried to skewer me, Scryer,
Varudin's voice said from somewhere on her left. She spun, but she couldn't find him.
Either that sight spell shot my vision too badly for my detection spell to work properly, or he's just that good at invisibility.
Lydia grimaced.
Invisibility and teleportation, and whatever that blue thingy was. Rush! When did Varudin learn at least two more dominions? And with that degree of proficiency, he's not even using incantations.
I need you to stop, Varudin. I don't want to take a side here. We should all talk this out. Guards, she instructed. Point your swords at that man,
she indicated Istvan.
Don't let him move. But if Varudin attacks him again, feel free to stab him, too.
A shockwave blasted Lydia off her feet.
Eru, Elan, Lav Kor Taris,
her comprehensive barrier reported unhelpfully. The barrier did stop her from feeling the impact as she hit the ground, however, so she was on her feet faster than the guards, who at a second glance didn't seem to be getting back up at all.
What the—
Varudin appeared right in front of Lydia, grabbing her sword's hilt and wrenching it out of her hand. The saber spun into the darkness, landing far out of reach. She responded by grabbing his injured right hand and squeezing. He groaned and fell to a knee.
Stop it, Varudin! I don't want to fight you!
She emphasized that by squeezing his hand a little harder.
Going to have to pick a side, even if you don't want to!
He muttered through grit teeth. And then she was clutching air. Lydia couldn't see him, but she knew where his next move would be. Istvan was still on the ground, shaking his head in disorientation, and none of the guards around him were moving. The sorceress rushed forward, tackling a flickering blur in the empty air. Lydia met resistance, her lunge catching him in the stomach instead of the shoulder she had been aiming for. Still, she managed to drag him down to the ground with some effort. That didn't keep him long, however. Varudin was still only half visible, and he managed to slam an elbow into her ribs, knocking the wind out of her. As she winced, he rolled on top of her. His good hand closed around her throat.
I don't want to do this! Surrender!
Varudin said. A mailed fist slammed into his cheek, knocking the sorcerer right off of her.
Got your papers,
Corin said, reaching down and wrenching her off the ground with a strong hand. Lydia woozily caught her feet. Varudin was gone again, and Istvan was still having difficulty standing up. She glanced at Corin dubiously, wondering how he was still standing.
Oh, right. I put a barrier on him before we left. Guess it worked. I should probably refresh that.
Dominion of protection! Corin went flying, slamming into the side of the wagon.
Lydia caught the flicker of his barrier triggering as he collided, but he smashed into it hard, cracking the wooden frame. Something slammed into Lydia from behind, invisible hands wrapping around her wrists.
Tell me you'll surrender and I'll stop, Varudin's voice said.
She slammed a foot down toward his, but he moved it aside and she caught only dirt. Through the corner of her eye, she caught Istvan raising his right hand. Varudin must have caught it too, because he relaxed his grip on her, presumably to try to teleport again.
Not getting away this time, Lydia thought.
She grabbed his injured hand again, squeezing hard.
Dominion of protection, fold against his skin.
Ignite!
Istvan said, a blast of light issuing from his outstretched hand toward Varudin. Varudin released Lydia, waved a hand, and the incendiary light caught him in the center of the chest. He crumpled to the dirt.
No,
Lydia thought, rushing over to Varudin's fallen form.
That shield should have stopped the blast, too. His teleport couldn't have been powerful enough to use up the barrier by itself.
The sorceress rolled him over, revealing a severe burn spreading across Varudin's entire chest. Smoke rose from the charred flesh, and his eyes were sealed shut.
"Clever move, using his shielding spell to prevent him from escaping,"
Istvan remarked, slowly approaching.
"Don't come any closer,"
Lydia instructed Istvan in a growl.
"I'm still not sure we're on the same side."
Lydia winced as she looked back to Varudin's charred skin.
"Reshet, I've never been good at life sorcery."
"Can you heal him?"
Lydia asked, not even bothering to turn toward Istvan.
"I'm not sure why he would even contemplate that, given that he just attempted to kill both of us."
The sorceress glared at Istvan.
"You started that, and you're going to give me some answers about that later."
"Interesting. I would think you would be the one owing me answers, given that I last saw you helping a prisoner escape the Low Palace," he said.
"He remembers? I'd better play this carefully. The others haven't filled you in yet? Look, tell me directly if you can heal Varudin or not. I promise I'll fill you in on that prisoner incident after this is dealt with."
"Very well. I'll stabilize him, but nothing further,"
Istvan said.
"Try to kill him and I will end you,"
Lydia assured him, standing and walking to retrieve her discarded sword.
"I keep my word, Sorceress Scryer. I hope that the same can be said of you."
Istvan bent over Varudin, pressing a hand against the burn.
"Mend."
A weave of green vine-like tendrils extended from Istvan's wrist to Varudin's chest.
"Good enough."
Lydia turned to check on Corin, but he was already back on his feet, helping one of the other guards stand. The sorceress breathed a sigh of relief.
"At least his death won't be on my conscience."
"Thanks for the save back there,"
Lydia said, approaching Corin.
"Not a problem. Now would you mind telling me what the resh is going on here?"
"I'm still sorting that out myself,"
Lydia admitted.
"Sorceress,"
Istvan intoned,
"you're not going to like this."
Lydia whirled, expecting to see that Varudin had stopped breathing. Instead, Varudin was gone.
"Dominion of knowledge, illuminate the hidden,"
she yelled, searching the area, focusing as deeply as she could. Not even a blur of Varudin was visible.
"Resh, he's gone."
Lydia walked slowly to match Istvan's limping pace. It had taken several minutes to get the guards back on their feet, and most of them still looked dazed. One of them had landed at a particularly bad angle and was nursing a broken nose. Given the unusual circumstances of the encounter, Lydia and Istvan had remained quiet as they helped the guards back to their feet and instructed the wagons to resume their journey. Corin gave a leery glance at Istvan every now and again, but he didn't remark on anything. Once the wagons had resumed their movement, Lydia and Istvan took to the front, walking ahead of the others to scan the road for any more threats. Istvan's breathing was hoarse, but his face was set with grim determination. Lydia was unused to seeing him without his mask, but he was surprisingly handsome. Like many from Terrasgard, he had brown skin and short, curly black hair. She had expected the mask was to conceal some kind of scarring, but no such damage was evident. Perhaps he simply wore the mask to look intimidating or inhuman. It certainly achieved those effects. Even without it, Istvan radiated a strong presence, seeming to loom over everything he observed.
"I will inform the queen that you cooperated,"
Istvan said, shattering the silence. She glanced over at him, quirking a brow.
"Care to explain that?"
He shivered, showing an uncharacteristic sign of weakness.
"He didn't use that much fire sorcery, and it's not really all that cold out," Lydia considered. "Was he already exhausted when he came out here?"
"The queen knew this caravan would not be allowed to leave the city without a fight. She decided to take the opportunity to see where your loyalties would fall if tested."
He broke into a fit of coughing, covering his mouth with his hand.
"Lasari keep you healthy,"
Lydia thought to herself. She wouldn't dare say it aloud.
"So this was just a test?"
The sorceress shook her head.
"People nearly died for a test of loyalty?"
Istvan shook his head, still coughing. After a moment, it passed, and he winced and waved a hand at her in a dismissive gesture.
"No, the attack was real," he assured her. We did not know who it would come from or when, but that was not staged. The test portion was simply that I was instructed not to interfere if you chose to handle the attack by yourself.
Ah, and he would try to eliminate me if I sided with the attackers, Lydia considered. That does make some level of sense. For a gambling sort, at least.
You expected that I would either fight off the attackers or join them. Choosing to investigate the wagons took you off guard, Lydia surmised.
Istvan nodded, straightening his back, as if to compensate for his earlier show of weakness.
Yes, and Varudin proved more dangerous than I could have anticipated.
Lydia folded her hands in front of her.
I'd only ever seen him use travel sorcery before, and even then, a single spell seemed to exhaust him. Could he have been misleading us about his capabilities for years?
No,
Istvan said simply, pausing to cough again.
That coughing can't be good. Perhaps he used too much life sorcery.
At a minimum, he was using travel sorcery, either sight or deception to make illusions, whatever knocked out the guards, and a type of blue fire. Radiance, maybe? Lydia mused aloud.
The spell that knocked out the guards was some kind of powerful sound sorcery,
Istvan explained after he recovered from his latest coughing.
It kept my ears ringing for minutes. I couldn't concentrate at all.
How'd you remain conscious through it? I had a protection spell active, Lydia explained, omitting the odd words she had seen when the comprehensive barrier attempted to translate the spell.
It was just like when Adon countered the sorcery in the arena. I think some of the words were even the same.
What does that mean? When I comprehended Jonan's spell, it was essentially translating his thoughts to me. Could they be thinking in another language? Or a cipher, perhaps?
Istvan chuckled softly, which was slightly jarring.
Before I came out here, I knew there was a possibility I might have to fight you. I asked Morella to cast a spell on me that would force me to remain conscious and aware.
Lydia grimaced. To counter the sleep spell I used on you last time. I'm sorry about that.
You still owe me an explanation, he pointed out.
Lydia nodded. I was pretending to break a prisoner out of the palace to learn who his contacts were. I tried to time it so we wouldn't have any opposition. You weren't supposed to be in the palace. You weren't even supposed to be in the city.
He nodded, smirking slightly.
A miscalculation. I have been working directly and covertly for the Queen for several months now. To prepare for this very day, in fact. If I had known about your pretend rescue, I would have been glad to help.
She tilted her head to the side.
Really? You have a funny way of trying to be helpful, given that you have a habit of attacking as soon as the door to your room opens.
Initiative is often necessary in this field of work. Hesitation can be deadly. Waiting would not have improved my odds, either against you and your paladin friend, or with Varudin.
He moved to wrap his arms around him, looking as if he was struggling to keep warm.
Paladin? What does he think he knows?
Lydia glanced back toward the wagons, noting that they were still far enough back that it was unlikely any non-sorcerer could be listening in on their conversation. Her sword was still sheathed on her left side, and she trusted that she was in better shape than Istvan was if she needed to act.
What were you doing in there with the sword? Lydia asked.
I was examining it, of course. I had hoped to break it out of the scabbard. A tool like that blade could have been very useful. Of course, after seeing your friend in the arena, I realized that we did not have a fraction of the information necessary to understand what we were really dealing with.
He took a deep breath.
It is difficult to know how to act when faced with only half of what you need to know.
I do agree. I take it that's your way of asking to trade information?
The itch to draw her steel faded somewhat, but she remained wary. His constant referral to Talion as her friend was disconcerting at best.
You have taken a side now, regardless of what you may have wished. It would be in your best interest to solidify your ties to the Queen before things escalate further.
He clasped his hands in front of him, turning his head to glance downward at her.
Especially given the other allies you've chosen.
I'm not sure what you mean by that, but I would be willing to agree to trade some information. I won't make any promises of taking a side until I understand what the sides are, however.
It should be obvious by now, isn't it?
Istvan waved back toward the caravan.
The queen is moving against Adon, Lydia surmised. Varudin works for Adon, and you work for the queen.
He nodded.
Very good. And you work for the Paladins of Taos.
She paused in her step.
Now why would you make an assumption like that?
Her right arm was itching again.
He shook his head, raising his hands.
Peace. The queen is known for quite some time. She has no problem allying with a Paladin of Taos. In fact, an alliance with your organization in general would be of mutual benefit at this stage. You needn't make pretenses about the rescue.
Lydia took a deep breath, considering that. He could be baiting me to admit something he's not sure about, but the logic behind the argument itself is sound. If the queen is starting a civil war against Adon, she's going to need all the allies she can get. Anyone strictly religious is going to side with Adon. If she intends to overthrow him, she needs to demolish the foundation of his power, which is the Adonate religion itself.
If, hypothetically speaking, I was a paladin, I still wouldn't be able to pledge any sort of allegiance for the organization as a whole,
Lydia pointed out.
It would be well beyond my hypothetical authority.
Of course,
Istvan agreed.
But you could carry a message, perhaps. A message that the queen would be more than happy to return Orlan to being a kingdom under the Taos faith, if only the heretic Adon could be removed. If your sword-bearing friend is any indication, it would appear the paladins are already making their own move.
I wouldn't assume that,
Lydia said hesitantly, resuming walking beside Istvan.
Even I don't know quite what that man is about in truth. I've been digging at him for days, trying to learn his story, but he's either not a paladin or a spectacular liar.
Istvan pursed his lips.
Truly? You're not lying about that?
She shook her head.
No reason to at this point. I do know he's dangerous, though, in case that wasn't obvious from his performance in the arena.
What have you been able to determine about his agenda in that case?
Lydia cracked her knuckles.
He seems to be trying to figure out his identity, claims that he was adopted, and that the sword was left with him. Apparently his adoptive parents told him he could find out something about his heritage in this city.
Not much to work with, and now Adon has taken an interest in him. He could be used as a tool against us, if we aren't careful.
Istvan said, perhaps more to himself than to Lydia.
Interesting usage of the term we. What's the deal with the caravan? What's so important in these wagons?
Istvan turned around, gesturing toward the caravan.
Four of those wagons carry former prisoners. We discovered them recently in a hidden facility and liberated them. We believe Adon was using them as some kind of power source to fuel his sorcery.
Now that's interesting. It'd be awfully coincidental timing if they just found out about the Rethri at the same time we did. I've never heard of a way to use people as a power source for sorcery, but the way those children were unconscious, with marks around their eyes? Maybe. It doesn't sound impossible.
So you think Adon's divine abilities were somehow being drawn from these prisoners?
Lydia asked, only half rhetorically.
That would be the theory, yes. He may have more of them, of course. We were only able to liberate the people in one specific facility. It would explain the level of power Adon has been able to demonstrate, as well as his apparent versatility, if he has created a form of sorcery that draws power from other people.
Istvan paused, allowing Lydia a moment to consider that.
Everyone has some level of connection with various dominions. That's how we function. Since Rethri tend to have a particularly strong bond to a specific dominion, a person who could draw sorcery from others could have a very potent tool at their disposal. I suppose it might be something like how a person utilizes a dominion-bonded item, or maybe a mixture between that and how the Vaykes can absorb dominion energy directly into themselves. If the Rethri are his power source, he'd need a way to draw on their power remotely. Something to establish a long-distance connection. Moving them, like what the queen is trying to do, might not even break that connection, depending on what it is.
Do you have any indication on how he might be drawing on the Rethri sorcery? When he was above the arena, for example, he did not have any Rethri with him, but he was still capable of casting a broad-reaching spell that removed the sorcery that was active in the arena,
Lydia pointed out.
And I also couldn't detect any dominion sorcery on him, which meant he had a way of concealing it or that whatever he's doing doesn't function in the same way that Dominion sorcery does.
When we found the prisoners, there was some sort of writing scratched into their cells. We were not able to translate it, but we believe the writing was the key to how he was drawing on their sorcery.
Istvan looked nervous, and he raised a hand to wipe sweat off his forehead.
Sweat? I thought he was cold a moment ago. Well, it probably doesn't matter. That writing seems important. Jonin saw some around the Asharan, too. Could the writing be in the same language or code that the comprehensive barrier was showing me?
All right, Lydia began. That's all good information. But why is the Queen Regent moving against Adon? She has one of the highest positions in the kingdom, and she's even considered one of the gods by the Adonates.
The Queen witnessed Adon doing something that shook her to the core. She has not told me what it was, but each time I've asked, I've seen a flicker of fear in her eyes. She is terrified of him, and she believes that if she does not act, she could quickly be replaced.
He paused for a moment, and then added,
"Having just seen what Varudin was capable of, I believe that I have some suspicions about what she might have been concerned about. He should not have been capable of using those abilities on his own."
Lydia grimaced.
He's right. No one achieves mastery over 3 new types of sorcery that rapidly. The only way people gain access to new types of sorcery overnight is through gifts of the gods themselves.
That was it. That was why the Queen was so worried, why Varudin was so powerful. Adon had learned how to grant the gifts of the gods.
Chapter 12. Mirrors. 3 days had passed since Jonin had last heard from Lydia or Talion. With his mirrors shattered, his sources of information were sparse at best. His vision had recovered substantially, but he still wore the thickest glasses he had available. It was late in the evening, and the night frost's scant light was barely enough for him to write by, but he didn't want to risk using a dark-seeing spell to make the process more efficient.
"I might have damaged my vision permanently again," he mused. "I really need to stop doing that."
A knock on the front door of his house startled him, and Jonin lifted himself away from his writing desk, instinctively fumbling for a dagger that wasn't there. Shaking his head, he walked to the door. A tap against the surface made the wood invisible, revealing Voraine standing on the other side. She was almost inconspicuous, wearing simple traveler's clothes of brown and gray. Only her eyes stood out, and even those gave no indication of her divine status. Large pouches sat on her left and right hips. No weapons were visible on her person, but that didn't mean a thing. Jonin opened the door.
"I've been expecting you," he said,
and it wasn't entirely untrue. He did expect her. He just didn't have the faintest idea of when or where she would make an appearance, or if he would survive the first few moments of it. Apparently she had chosen a less-than-murderous reunion, which was good. She stepped inside, silently, nudging the door shut.
"It's time," she said ominously. "Are you prepared?"
Give me just a moment." He scampered up the stairs to the former guest bedroom, which was where he had been sleeping for the last few days. Voraine clearly knew that the underground room had been his previous bedchamber, so he hadn't been able to force himself to sleep down there since her last visit. And his fake bedroom didn't seem much better. Once upstairs, he retrieved a pair of bags, not dissimilar to the ones Voraine was carrying, and attached them to a belt which he fastened on. In the bags, he carried his last handful of alchemical vials, a pair of still unbroken mirrors, and his mostly useless dagger. All in all, it wasn't much for infiltrating the lair of a false god, but he'd find a way to get by. He always did. "Ready now!" he called as he half-ran, half-stumbled his way down the stairs. She looked him up and down.
"That was fast."
"Just where, precisely, are we headed?" Jonin asked. "I try to be aware of my odds of survival before I go out at night, and I may need additional supplies."
"The High Palace,"
she said in a half-whispered tone. He quirked an eyebrow. "Why would you need me in order to get into the High Palace? Don't you live there?" She shook her head.
"No, And I could get into the palace itself, of course, but that doesn't mean I could just walk into any room I want, and certainly not without questions being asked. I'm pretty good at concealing myself, but your invisibility is better, and I don't know anyone else who can cast that.
All right, but that's not really very specific. I should have been clearer. Where specifically within the palace are we going? What is our objective? What sort of opposition should we expect to encounter? What path will we be using to leave after we complete our objective?
The purplish-eyed sorceress leaned back against the wall near the entrance to his borrowed home. She turned her head away from him, gazing toward a particularly normal wall.
We need Adon's notes from his research on the disease my brother is afflicted with. I know where he keeps his research notes, but in spite of my status as a goddess, I don't actually have the authority to be in there. There will almost certainly be guards, and probably at least some kind of sorceress protection.
Oh, good, Jonan mumbled. So all we have to worry about are guards, wardens, and possibly gods. Go on.
You are the one who proposed an alliance, she pointed out. If you were being insincere.
Oh, no, not at all. I just tend to like doing things with better odds of survival is all. What's our way out?
There are windows,
the sorceress offered.
Windows.
Jonan forced his eyes shut.
You want us to climb out windows?
Varane shrugged.
It may not be necessary. My authority will carry us through most situations, and your invisibility spell can handle many others. We may not be detected, but if we are, the place we are going is only a few floors up.
Only a few floors up. Am I the only one in this city that isn't some sort of invincible godlike being? I suppose I should go get some rope, then.
He did have some rope somewhere. He just hadn't been planning to have to make use of it. After about 5 minutes, Jonan turned up a coil of climbing rope, which he had never used. He packed it tightly into one of his pouches, allowing the bundle to stick out just a bit from the top. Varane quirked a brow at him, but she said nothing. I may not be precisely qualified for this kind of work, he mumbled, but I am as ready as I'm going to be.
Good, she said. Follow me.
It was deep into the night when they arrived at the gardens before the High Palace. Varane had not shared any further details of her plan, and his efforts to inquire for more details, or even engage in pleasant conversation, had proven largely fruitless. They were, by Jonan's estimation, nearly in sight of the front gates when she pulled him off of the road into a series of tall hedges.
Well, he considered, I haven't been dragged off into the bushes by a woman in quite a while.
Ever, actually. The last thought was somewhat depressing, especially given the context of the situation.
Hide us, Varane said simply, and then follow.
He put a finger on her forehead, which was unnecessary, and her quizzical glance seemed to indicate that she might have known that, and concentrated.
Erase our images, except to each other.
Since there would be no visible effect of that spell to each other, Jonan added,
Make a shimmery thing on us,
creating a shiny distortion that was visible to the pair. Varane gave an incredulous expression, then shook her head and turned away from him, but not before he caught the slightest hint of a grin on her face. He grinned in turn, following her toward the palace gates, which were closed, of course. She grabbed his wrist, dragging him forward, between the pair of guards who were chatting at the door. He glanced from side to side, always uncomfortable coming into close proximity with others while he was invisible. He was not soundless, and neither was she. They reached the door a moment later, and Varane stepped through it, dragging Jonan behind her. He felt no resistance as he passed inside the door.
Don't lose the spell inside the door, he thought, briefly panicking.
He didn't know precisely what would happen if Varane's spell dissipated right while he was inside, but he couldn't imagine the result being anything less than horrifying. After they were through, he took a deep breath, noting that the inside corridors appeared to be both dark and empty, probably on account of the time of night.
That was actually kind of neat, he considered in retrospect. A kind of travel sorcery, maybe. I'll have to figure out how she did that later, and then never do it again.
She released her grip on his wrist, moving fluidly onward, her steps silent against the carpeted floor.
She made a quick glance to each side as they passed intersections, never stopping, never slowing. They reached a stairway leading upward a few scant minutes later, and she stepped onto it. Perhaps it was just his proximity and the comparative quiet, but her first step against the stone seemed to ring in his ears more loudly than it should have. Jonan followed nervously, a hand creeping into his pocket to wrap around a vial of smoke. It was his first instinct as an escape mechanism if someone saw through the invisibility. The smoke was real, not an illusion, and thus it would still obscure vision even if someone could penetrate his spell. "Where is she leading me?" he wondered for the hundredth time. "Another Rethri storage area? Somewhere Adon does his research? A trap designed specifically for me, perhaps?" He doubted he was special enough to warrant such treatment, but it was nice to dream from time to time. They passed three floors on the stairway before stopping at the fourth. The stairway led on, but Voraine stepped off of it into another carpeted hall, which blessedly, once again, began to muffle the sounds of their footsteps. "Odd how quiet it is here, even considering the hour," Jonan considered. "That also could indicate a trap, but she hasn't reacted to it. Perhaps this location is simply private enough that they don't have many guards active at night." Voraine led them past several heavy wooden doors that lined the keep's gray stone walls, seeming focused exclusively on their destination. They passed a patrolling guard who carried a lit torch in one hand and wore a longsword on his belt. Voraine and Jonan pressed against the wall as they slid past the guard, and he seemed to pay them no notice. "Not entirely abandoned, I guess," Jonan considered. He watched the guard move away from them, noting that the man seemed to be walking very slowly and deliberately. Could he be expecting to find someone tonight? Or is that just how he walks? Or maybe the people here are just very insistent on quiet. Voraine led him onward, finally stopping by a door that looked no different from the rest. Jonan noted a keyhole on the door and briefly prayed that Voraine wouldn't drag him through the door to bypass the mechanism. Instead, she retrieved a key from the pouch on her left side and turned it in the lock. A click indicated the key had done its work, and she slowly and deliberately turned the knob. A large room stood beyond the door, a long sofa in the far left corner, opposite a desk and a fantastically large bookshelf. Directly across from their entrance was another door, this one plated in silver and etched with unusual runes. "Similar to the ones around the Asharin," Jonan noted. "Probably some sort of sorceress protection. We should avoid it." And lying on the sofa was a young woman, her eyes closed in apparent slumber. She was mostly covered in multiple layers of wool blankets, and it looked like she was cradling something in her arms beneath the blankets. Voraine turned and raised a finger to her mouth in the universal gesture of silence, indicating for Jonan to come inside. The pair stepped in, and Voraine slowly closed the door behind them. Jonan glanced back toward the bed with a feeling of trepidation. Who is that? Where are we? A second, more thorough glance around the room took in more details. Only some of the runes on the door were familiar, but at a second glance, he noted a matching symbol on each side that resembled a spear. That's not a sorceress rune, he realized, but a pictograph representing the Heartlands. Looking back at the bookcase, he realized the markings on the spines of several books he had seen before. A book on the Plains by Eric Tarin, a book on the Dominion of Protection by Edric Theus, even a book on Dominion Bonds by Blake Hardigan. The first and last were both rare and expensive. The other owner, he was aware of, was one of the wealthiest people in Sullier. This is probably Adon's library, and that door on the other side leads to something even more dangerous. Maybe his personal bedchamber, or wherever he's holding more of the Rethri. Oh, Resh, I should have expected this. Voraine was heading over to the desk and bookshelf. Jonan followed nervously, glancing back toward the woman in the bed. Who, he considered, would be sleeping in Adon's library? While her body was mostly covered by blankets, he noted her exceptionally dark hair, which was a stark contrast to her pale skin. Likely from near Liadra, he realized. He filed that away for later and moved over to Voraine, who was searching quickly, removing and scanning through books on the bookshelf. Voraine leaned close to him as he approached, whispering in his ear,
"Find his research notes."
"Oh, sure, that's specific." Jonan was beginning to doubt Voraine's planning ability and his own wisdom in following along, but Voraine clearly knew something, or, more accurately, many things, that he didn't. He went to the desk first, finding a stack of papers with a quill and inkwell next to them. Glancing at the top paper, it looked like it was some kind of financial report. "From the Talier and Castle Depository," he realized as he glanced further down the document. Nothing particularly suspicious about that, but it does confirm his connection with the bank at least. He quickly parsed through the next several papers in the stack before shaking his head and setting them back the way they were. Nothing looked like research notes within that stack, so he moved on to a stack of books that sat next to it. There were four books in the pile, and a look at the cover of each told him that the first two were histories, and the third was one of Eric Taran's books on Dominion sorcery theory. Could be interesting, but not relevant, Jonan considered. He paged through them to confirm if the covers hid a different interior, but they all appeared to be what they claimed to be. The fourth book's cover was blank, and the text inside was gibberish. "Hello," Jonan considered, grinning to himself.
"Tesh Molain, Sol Co Eru, Ravul Laris Taris," the first line read.
A line pointed from the word Eru into a nearby margin, with the text,
"Len Cor Vesu et Taris," written aside it.
"Not sure if research notes, but interesting," Jonan considered. "It's not in any language I recognize, but it's still using Velfrin letters. Some sort of constructed language or code, then. Interesting. This could be important." He poked Voraine in the arm, and she spun around. He gestured down to the open book, and she leaned down, glancing over the page. Her eyes narrowed.
"That might be something. We'll take it, but keep looking," Voraine said.
Jonan shuffled some of the vials out of his left pouch and moved them to the right, slipping them in between the coils of rope, and slipped the mysterious book into the left pouch. It didn't fit properly, and the top stuck out several inches, but it didn't feel like it was going to fall out immediately. Voraine set down another book on the table and slipped another off the shelf, opening it.
"Here,"
she said quietly, glancing at the top page and then beginning to flip through the pages one at a time. Jonan nervously glanced backward toward the bed. The girl within had rolled over to her left, and Jonan couldn't see if her eyes were open or closed, but she didn't seem to be moving. Minutes passed as Voraine read. After the first minute or so, Jonan went to the shelf to grab another book, but Voraine waved a hand for him to stop. She had apparently found what they were looking for.
"Resh," she said out loud. "It's true."
She shoved the book, open to about the midpoint, into Jonan's hands. He glanced at the page. "With their bonds exhausted, the current set of sources are no longer useful. The last batch provided useful output for more than 8 years, proving that the second test stage's methods are significantly more efficient. Given the amount of suspicion I generated when gathering the last batch, I will need to revise my acquisition procedures. Raymond's apprentice wants me to look after her brother. That could lead to opportunities to restock or even expand." Jonan turned at the sound of shuffling blankets. By the time he had spun around, the young woman was a blur, moving too quickly for his eyes to process. She reappeared in the corner of the room furthest from them, holding the heartlance in a defensive stance. Wearing only a white nightgown, her body's shape was obvious. She had a soldier's build and a soldier's scars. And as he watched, her blue eyes flashed with light and changed to gold. The white around her iris remained. Her eyes were human, not Rethri.
What?
Two metal objects flashed past Jonan, but the gold-eyed woman deflected them effortlessly, sending the projectiles to crash into the stone walls. Voraine shoved the book into Jonan's hands closed, catching his eyes as he glanced toward her.
"Run! Take the book and run!"
A blade of ice appeared in Vorain's hands, and she charged, lashing out at the woman with the heart lance. The golden-eyed warrior parried each strike, breaking pieces of ice off of the weapon, and swept the shaft of the spear into Vorain's ribs. The single strike carried Vorain off her feet,